another Walking Dead Day out there. Or sorry, Last of Us Day.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's modern the new reference. Yeah, I gotta stay up. Gotta stay hip with the kids. Gotta stay fresh. What do you guys say for the fresh? What's your slang?
Fresh? I think it's just still fresh.
Nah.
That's what I say. Keep it fresh.
Something else?
Keep it new. Fresh. Now I'm trying to think. My brain's not working.
Way to go, Joe. The one thing you're useful for is young person stuff. You couldn't even do it.
I think it's still fresh.
Nah.
I personally say fresh.
I would go with fresh too, Joe, but we might not be hip. That could be what this says.
I agree.
Are we old?
You guys are not hip. It is. It's weird. You go through the are we old phase multiple times. You think, and the worst part is I know I'm in one of those are we old phases again where I'm not. Like, it's going to hit me again when I'm like 42 and I'm going to go, damn, I wasn't that old. Mm. I could have done more stuff. So I'm really trying to push past that mentality a lot. Like, it's fun with your friends to go, damn. And you should have self-awareness. My God, who's listening to this live today? It's a pure podcast audience.
Go hang out with your families, please.
No, I want you. I'm saying, who's working? Like, I'm saying I was out there today, Last of Us Day, is because I did the thing. It happens to me every single time. I don't know when vacation days actually are because we don't really get them in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
We get Liu days. Liu. Oh, you get a Liu day.
Is that what it's called? Liu day?
Liu day, yeah. Liu day. Liu day. Anyway, and then those Liu days, by the way, your bosses will never tell you that you have them. They'll let you, you gotta be on alert to snag
those. This is the first time hearing about it.
Yeah, well, you don't get it. You're not full time.
Yeah, I know.
You're just here.
Well, I am full time, but I'm not. It's like full time hours,
dude. Do you hear this guy, Austin?
Joe, just
dude,
stop.
Save it for the chicks,
buddy.
Joe. Who are you talking to in here?
Myself.
I am full time, but I'm not. Yeah, like we know you're here every day, buddy. I'm just saying.
Talking to myself.
There is no need for that. There's no need for that right now. Save it for the ladies.
My fault.
Yeah, I am full time, but I'm not. That's a line you give a girl at a bar as you're telling her. You should listen to my podcast. I have a podcast. That's what Joe. 100%. 100% he's doing. But no, so I never know it's the days. So I show up and I always think the same thing. I'm like, what happened today? What's going on out here? Is the train
pandemic's
down?
Back.
Yeah, is the pandemic back? Yeah.
Oh no.
Is Last of Us on? Did the fungus start? Is it?
You're a clicker from like a nearby building?
Yeah. And then you just see one more person on the subway platform. You go, yo. Train's running. Think so. All right.
We're in this together. Yeah,
exactly. And they run in frequently now, right? So you sit there, you wait for a while. I actually thought I might have to turn around today and rip this sucker from home. Because I was like, how long are these things? How long does it last?
Does it not tell you on like a
Yeah, it does, but it's like one tiny little TV at the other end of the platform.
That bullshit's never like, told the truth either.
Yeah, I was going to say, those things are lies.
Very old fill of you. Those things are lies. Very old fill of you, Joe, to not know that.
No, I used to take them, but I didn't know how accurate they were.
You used to take the TV screens?
Yes, I used to steal them off the platforms.
Again, Joe, save your lies for the bar.
TTC.
No one needs your lies here today. So yeah, happy Good Friday to everybody. Happy Easter. For those of you that are listening to the podcast right now, thank you so much. Thank you so much. For those of you that are driving to work, keep grinding. Hashtag rise and grind. All of us in this together. Okay, so for most of you, you're not listening to this because you're just already crushed on the couch, ready to watch golf all day. Congratulations to you, heroes. What a win for you. It is, now that I think about it, a little interesting, though, that Masters on Easter Sunday, where you have to be like, I really want to see this. And someone goes, we're having brunch with family.
That's
what?
True.
How many divorces are going to happen? How many just...
You got to have it on your phone under the table. Just like
you're gonna have
subtly.
Some guys are going to have to eat some this weekend. Some guys are going to have to just be sitting there grumbling. My sister was in town yesterday, and I took her to brunch. And we went for brunch. We went to a nice place, and there was a couple beside us that was sitting down, and the guy was clearly on a date.
Mm.
And he was explaining to his date what the Masters was. And I thought, dude, you just say best golf tournament or most important golf tournament on earth.
And, that's all you have to say.
And he was kind of going into it and talking about the PGA and LIV, and I have never seen a woman so bored in my life.
Oh, no.
It was so hard. And I My sister was talking to me, and I couldn't just stop eavesdropping on this conversation, and she finished talking. I'm definitely, by the way, I am an eavesdropper, all right? You see me in public, you're on a date, you're right beside me in those tables where
I'm listening.
Cuddled in, I know what's going on with you, all right? I know what's happening with you and your crew. I'll at least know a little bit, and then when I'm bored, I'll check out and go like, all right, my people are more interesting than this. This isn't even fun, but I'll have the voyeuristic tendencies to check in and see what's going on. Anyway, so a couple of quick things before I get to James Myrtle and talk about the Leafs-Bruins game yesterday. Mm. The Leafs playoff ready. Leafs talk also up yesterday. Sammy and I. Boy, it was a fun one. Sam was a little loose. It was a fun Leafs talk last night. Good Leafs talk last night. Subscribe and review. Same with this podcast. Leave 5 stars. Do all those things. You know the drill. Share it. Tell a friend. Do those things. Happy Easter. Good Friday, deed.
Yep.
Quick couple of takes from the last 24 hours. One. Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods going to win the same amount of green jackets moving forward, which is zero. There is just no shot. I don't know why. Okay, so maybe it's because I'm not embedded enough in the golf world because I haven't seen this enough. And I know there's some groaning about Rory's start, and I know what he'll do, which is he'll probably backdoor some top 10 or get in the conversation around what is it from Succession? It's important to be in the conversation. That's Rory McIlroy. He is the Connor Roy of the Masters. Like, he's 1%. That's him. 1% chance. You're just hanging around. You want to be in the conversation. It's important to be in the conversation, Rory. We get it. You have no shot of ever winning this thing. Does the golf community really believe that this is just a coincidence? This whole course is set up to score on Thursday. They go, hey, we know this is going to be a bloodbath with the bad weather over the next couple of days. So let's give the fans a day where all the best golfers absolutely dot it and hit golf shots. Mm-hmm. And there was, do you guys see, did you guys, I don't know if you guys watched any of the Masters yesterday, if you caught any. Like,
all over it, baby.
Okay, so Austin, you were watching. The highlight reel they cut yesterday of the top shots was outrageous. Missing in action, the guy, Mr. PGA, Mr. Oh, I just want to go out there and have fun with my friends. Oh,
great accent. We're still friends.
Want to go out there and have fun with my friends. Brooks. Brooks Koepka.
Brooks.
He's out there having fun, and I just want to be out there having fun with my friend.
I still see him.
I love Dustin Johnson. He's a great guy. Yes.
You're like Conor McGregor almost. Fading into McGregor.
It's the Northern Ireland. You heard it distinctly, Joe.
There's only one way to start the Conor McGregor accent, and you can't do it.
That's true.
You can't
but
do it.
But you know who it is.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what it is.
Finish the game on your own.
Is that guy?
Finish the game on your own at home. Anyway, Rory is just, he's got a mental block with this tournament. He starts slow every single time because he cannot handle the pressure. He cannot handle this tournament. He was doing the walk and talk on the golf course, and I'm going, dude, this is sad. You can't be doing the walk and talk and finish the day the way that you did.
Yeah.
And start the day that way that you did. So, yeah, and Tiger Woods, it is what it is. Everyone loves, they just immediately, all the Tiger fans just immediately, he's hurt, he's so hurt. Oh, he's so hurt. We all do this thing with sports where you're supposed to say, hey, are you hurt or injured? It's a joke that they do on Pardon My Take. But it's true. Are you injured? Stay out. Are you hurt? Play through the pain. Tiger Woods is the only person on the planet where everyone goes, hey, this doesn't count. Like, none of this counts. You go, fine, because he was the greatest. There's no question. He was the most dominant. He basically built what we're watching here today. We have an interest in this because of Tiger Woods, essentially, all of us casuals. He's still the guy that's going to be the number one draw. He's still the person that you just want to see make a great shot. You still want him in the hunt. Good for him that he've only finished the day 2 over because he did look like he was wincing at times. But can we stop? Like, either he's playing or he's not. We get it. He's been... How many times do I need to be told about all the injuries he's had? Like, we know. Yeah. He's an old man. He is done. There's no more miracle happening for Tiger Woods. Like, does not have the body. And now as the conditions are going to get worse and we're going to get deeper into this tournament, like, day one was his best shot. Same thing. It's not happening. But Rory is even more disappointing. Like, they sold this entire thing as Rory McIlroy's chance and the head of the PGA and do this and do that. Well, Scottie Scheffler looked pretty good. Wasn't amazing, but looked pretty good. John Rahm looked pretty damn good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, Xander Schauffele looked pretty damn good. Brooks Koepka,
he's an elite
the Live Tour man, came out, dominated. Where was Rory? Walking, talking his way into an absolute nothing burger of a day. So I don't think it's ever going to happen. I think, like, we call, he's, this is a weird one. I used to talk about this with Ennis a lot. Where it's like, you can't call him a full-blown choker because he's won majors before, right?
Yeah.
But can someone who wins still be considered a choker? And I think he is kind of in that category where you go, he's won. Mm. Maybe he wasn't always a choker, but at this tournament, he is a choker. This is it. I don't care what he does the rest of the way. He's not catching John Rahm. He's just not. He's not going to catch John Rahm seven shots over the next couple of days with these impossible conditions. Like, it's just not going to go down. So I maybe it'll get discussed more when the tournament's over because people don't want to write him off because they know he's going to heat up a little bit and that he's going to end up being playing a little bit better over these next couple of days. But I think it's one of the more fascinating sports stories right now that one of the best golfers on the planet who has just got this one tournament to close the career Grand Slam, he cannot do it.
He can't do it.
he cannot do it. Like, it is, and it will never, I do not think it will ever happen for him. Really? Like, I genuinely don't. No. I think he will, dude, he gets off to, it's every single time. It's the most predictable thing at every single Masters, is that Rory McIlroy is going to poo in the bed to start these things. Yeah. And then the whole golf world goes, don't worry, it's a hard tournament. It's the best golfers in the world. It's like, he's supposed to be one of the best guys.
And then he goes, all the best guys dominated.
He stunk. It is a pure choke. It is a choke, choke, choke. It just doesn't, we're normally talking about choking at the back end, at the end of a game, right? Oh, someone has to close one out. Are they going to be able to hit that final putt? Are they going to be able to record that final out? Are they going to be able to hit that last minute buzzer beater shot? Like, that's usually choking. Yeah. Hit those free throws under the gun. This guy chokes before he can even get out of the gate. Like, it's over before it even begins for him, but it's definitely a choke, and I actually think it's the number one chokey thing right now in sports that I can count on. Mm. There's nothing better than this. Like, we used to talk about David Price, right? Mm. Oh, he's going to choke. Rory's the guy.
Rory's that guy now.
The question is the team that we're about to discuss with James Myrtle, the team version of that, the Toronto Maple Leafs, they play solid game against the Boston Bruins last night. Really nice. Broke it down yesterday again on Leafs Talk and thought it was very much playoff style. Made me hungry for the playoffs. I went, come on, like, why do we have to do these final? Do you know how horrible it's going to be watching that Saturday night Montreal game? Nightmare. Nightmare. That Tampa game as a teaser before they actually play meaningful games? Just make that one.
It's cruel. Make it game one.
Make that game one.
Make it game one, please.
And then break Rangers and then start game two. That's the way that this is going to go. Anyway, James Myrtle, Senior Managing Editor at The Athletic. What's up, brother? How are we doing?
I'm good. Happy Good Friday.
Happy Good Friday. This is the worst part, right? Like, this is the when you're waiting to write an exam and then there's 25 minutes before you can get into the gym and write it. This is the slog of the season. People think it's the middle of the year. People think it's like the after Christmas or the February blues time. To me, this is the slog where it's the final couple of days of the year. All the matchups are essentially set. You're trying to have discussions about, hey, should you play guys, rest guys, or should they be trying to ramp up for the playoffs? Like, nothing in sports is worse than these next couple of games.
I got to be honest. I feel like the last like 5-6 weeks of the Leafs season has been like, let's just get it over with. You know, it's felt incredibly long, incredibly pointless. And it just, there have been lots of other years where it hasn't mattered, where the Leafs have known who they were going to play. But this year, it's like, it really just doesn't matter. Like, you know, I was listening to you guys on the Leafs Talk last night and, you know, someone's not playing well. And I was like, well, it doesn't matter. Like, as long as they put it together in the playoffs, then no one is going to care about what happened over the last 10 games here. So it's just, you know, and you know, hearing from some of my buddies who are huge Leafs fans, they're not watching these games. Mm-hmm. They just don't care. They don't care. You know, the Jays are back and they're paying attention to other things right now. And it's the switch will get flipped when the playoff games start. But right now, I bet you the ratings are not great right now.
I will say this is, when you're watching the Masters and you go, damn, this is so intense. And you're watching the Blue Jays, and they started their season kind of rocky, and they really needed wins against the Kansas City Royals. But also the baseball season, the first few games always feel way more important, right? Sets a huge tone. Even though it's 162 and you finish these first two series and you go, that was nothing. That actually was nothing. We will not have a discussion about those games later in the year. There's not going to be, you know, it was the turning point of the season, game four against the Royals when they had Kikuchi go out there and he delivered. Like, it's not going to happen, but it still is fun. Okay, but you want to wade in on be the tiebreaker here, though, on the Nylander thing? Because you're right. We did talk about guys who are not performing well for a little while, and I expressed a little bit of that apathy where I went, it's hard for me to really criticize somebody. But, yeah, Nylander, you look at it, since March, April, 4 goals in 18 games. And this is a guy who has 37 on the year. Did a lot of his scoring on the front end, not a lot of it on the back end. What do you think is happening here? A guy conserving himself, a guy in a slump, a guy who is just can't get up for some of these games that are meaningless. Do you have anything on the concernometer for the way that Nylander's been playing as of late?
Yeah, I do. Just because, and it's not just him. I think it's that connection with Tavares, and I would say both of them don't look that effective. And you get O'Reilly back and you put him on a different, I don't know. My concern is you get into the playoffs and you're playing a really good team. And if Tavares and Nylander are still ineffective, and it's not just the goals and it's not just the points. Cause if you look at the underlying numbers, even since they started making the trades in mid-February, they're not good. They're really not good. So, and that's something that, there's a historical precedent for that too, right? Like Tavares and Nylander have struggled in previous seasons together and gone through long stretches where it hasn't looked good. So yeah, I'm a little bit concerned, but you know, hearing your take where you're like, it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. And Nylander's one of those guys where he knows when it doesn't matter. And yeah. I bet if you looked through like Nylander's stats post clinching or post when it mattered, they're probably not very good, because I seem to recall that he's had lulls like this to end other seasons and then been pretty good when the playoffs start. So maybe that'll be the case here.
That's why I can't be too upset about it, and that's why my position is that way, is I think he is a big game player. Like, I think that he will turn it on come playoff time, and he is one of those dudes where for a team, and I've made this point before, I really hate it when the Leafs as a team are playing very sloppy hockey, where there's a ton of turnovers and there's not a lot of attention to detail and they're getting barbecued and just going, yeah, whatever, we're kind of sleepwalking through this game. I think that they actually should be tightening the screws because they haven't proven anything as a group. But as an individual, to me, Nylander actually is the ultimate I can flip the switch guy. Like, I'm going to dog it in a meaningless game against Columbus. There's no question. But call me when the playoffs start and you'll finish this series. And after whatever the amount of games are, so he's 7 for the lead, after the 7 games and we lose, and you look back on, hey, what were the issues here? I don't think Nylander's going to be all that high on the list. I will say this, though. This is what concerns me. Keefe, at first I thought with those lines, right, the shuffling of the lines this late in the year and deciding to put Matthews with Yarncroc and with Bunting, I went, you know, I don't mind this. Maybe this is something that's a little smart. And I thought it was potentially about Matthews, that he was going so well. Let's see if we can cheat and put him with essentially anyone. And he's clearly got chemistry with both Bunting and Yarncroc, not at the same time. But those two guys have both worked with Austin Matthews to really successful degrees. And then I was watching the game last night and really not noticing the impact of a second line that had John Tavares and William Nylander and Mitch Marner, and going, why aren't these guys dominating when that's so much talent on one line? And then it hit me like a ton of bricks, going, oh my God, this wasn't about Matthews at all. It was like the twist reveal in a M. Night Shyamalan movie where I went, this is about these guys. This is about they're giving Marner to these two guys to see what the hell they have, because maybe the optimization of the lineup is they need to elevate those two with Mitch Marner. I'm going, elevate those two with Mitch Marner? That's $18 million worth of hockey player right there. Don't elevate those two guys. That shouldn't be happening here. And so I would say that gave me a little bit of a nervousness, is if you're going to do that kind of deployment, those guys should cave in the opposition, and they didn't last night in a meaningful game where everybody was trying.
Yeah, and I know everyone's, well, I don't know if I would say everyone's excited, but I know people were amped up for that game and feel like it was playoff-like and it was really close, but you know, just to play devil's advocate, you know, the Bruins don't have Taylor Hall. They don't have David Krejci. McAvoy only plays, what do you play, 11, 12 minutes before he gets hurt and he leaves the game. Ooh, they've got their backup goalie in there. Like, the Leafs had everybody. And you're right. Like, you create this super line with three of your big four, and they didn't play well. They didn't play well, you know, and the underlying numbers weren't great. Just noticing them on the ice, they weren't that noticeable.
Nope.
And that, you're right. I think that putting Marner there is like, Keefe is, it's almost like desperation mode, cattle prod these guys and see if we can get anything there, because there just hasn't been a lot lately. And that's a big problem. I think they should probably go back to O'Reilly there, but I can see why he likes O'Reilly at center. That's like the safety valve where you feel confident in all four lines if you have O'Reilly centering that third line. But they're going to need the offense, right? Like, they're going to want to score more. I think last year in the series in seven games, I think they have 24 goals or something like that. They're going to want to score at least that many goals. And if you don't have Nylander and Tavares going, it's going to be hard to get there.
Well, man, yesterday was just a reminder, too, though, of how these playoff games go a lot of the times, which is they're low-scoring, low-event games, and that's why so much gets put on these goaltenders and why the past, with all of the high-potent offensive teams that the Leafs have tried to roll out, that there's been so much consternation about the goaltending. And it's like, yeah, that happens because not usually the guys giving up a bunch of soft ones. It's the one soft one, and it breaks your back because there isn't a lot of scoring. And we always say hyper-emphasis on the depth, because you need to get the depth scoring. And that was the story last year. Like, Tampa's depth absolutely caved in Toronto's depth in terms of what they ended up with the score sheet, especially when you took away the empty netters in that series. I think the Leafs only had maybe three even-strength goals from their bottom six. That's just going off of memory. But I tried to lock that one in for this series. I'll have to look that one back up. Three maybe even strength goals from the bottom six guys.
Try and remember who they were too, right? Like, yeah. I mean, like, Engvall didn't have anything, and Mikheyev didn't have anything, and like, then they had Simmons and Clifford playing games on the fourth. Like, you feel better about this lineup, especially with the way that, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but at the way that Aston Reese is playing right now, and then Lafferty and Kampf, like, they look like they might actually be able to bang in a couple of goals, but...
Yep.
So they've upgraded there, and you're absolutely right. Like, they need to be able to get something there, especially if it comes down to the big guys and it's a real stalemate and they can't. It's like a chess match where no one can break through. Mm-hmm. If you can get a Nick Paul to all of a sudden make a difference, it's huge.
Yeah, no, it's massive. Just ultimately, you're going to need more production from your top six than. What you like, obviously more than no goals last night, but I just mean even more impactful shifts from a group that's going to be that loaded. And the O'Reilly thing is, I think they're going to end up doing both. And what I think is pretty clear at this point, it's kind of funny because Sheldon Keefe, he gets introduced to us in the Columbus series, right? The Columbus series happens, and what does he get hammered for? Not making any adjustments, just sticking with the same thing throughout the course of the entire series. And that was loading up a Tavares, Matthews, Marner line that worked to a lot of effectiveness in terms of chances for and high data, everything. Like, statistically, it was great. The rest of the team didn't really do too much. That was sort of actually the Nylander gets hammered series where they tried to do a couple of different things with him and people wondered what was fair, what wasn't. But he wouldn't deviate from it, right? He was like, nope, this is what's set and this is what we're doing. And now fast forward to today, after a bunch of series where people have criticized him about breaking up the top guys and tinkering with those groups, now he's just tinkering nonstop. It's a moving guys around constantly is just a part of the formula. And so I almost feel like it's a bit of wasted breath for us to go, well, Ryan O'Reilly is going to be the third line center. Yeah, like maybe to start the game, but what does it matter? Because it feels like Keefe is just going to shuffle things up throughout every single game all throughout the playoffs. Like, I'm not sure there's going to be any, I always struggle with this word, but I'm going to try it anyways. Congruity? Is that it? Did I get it right?
Congruency?
Congruency. That's it. See, I'm so, there it is. I don't think, damn it. I was like, come on. I went to the rim and I just got, like, I got a 21-year-old kid that just was like, what are you doing, professional speaker? Congruency throughout the playoffs.
I appreciate the effort, though.
Thank you. I put myself out there as vulnerable.
It's one of those $10 words that you don't often hear on the sports radio at 9 a.m.
Oh, damn it. So stupid. That's why I am here, though. That's why I'm not in a big, important meeting. They're like, dude, you're too dumb. Get out. That's it. But you know what I'm saying? Like, what is even the point of talking about some of these things? Because what would you say the odds are that we see real set groupings in the postseason, the first round against Tampa? I think all those guys that we mentioned, the most important players, are going to be all over the place all the time.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's what you want to have, too, because if you've only... one of my big criticisms of Keith wasn't just that Columbus year. Remember the Montreal year where they just ran away with the Canadian division and it was all locked in and they had a huge season and, you know, they didn't try anything that year. Like, they didn't... you know, even the power play faded over the last, whatever it was, month and a half of the season. They didn't really change anything. Mm-hmm. And then you get into a series and you're up 3-1 and like, oh, everything's working. But then when it stopped working, they didn't have a lot of things they could go to where they had tried in the past. So I think Keefe's made a lot of progress in that respect, and that, you know, now we've seen a lot of different lineup formations. Maybe that's why he's got the Marner, Tavares, Nylander. It's just like there's one thing that we haven't really seen, and let's see what it looks like. Let's get those guys comfortable with each other. Maybe there's something there that he can go to at some point. But when the puck drops for game one on April 17th or 18th or whenever we're going to get going here, mm-hmm. He's going to revert to something we've seen a little bit more this season.
Oh, I think that it is a lock. Matthews and Marner start together come postseason time.
Yeah, I think it should be too. Yeah,
sure, of course. Man, if you've come this far with this core, and you've decided what we're doing here is we just feel like this has been a small sample or a bad luck or whatever the hell reasons. Like they obviously believe in this group and they believe in this big four setup that they have. You're not going to go into the playoffs and not put Matthews and Marner together in what is the last dance year until next year's last dance year, right? But in like for right now, this last dance year, the last dance 3.0 or whatever the hell this whatever version we're in right now, I think you start with your horses, but you want to be ready to make those adjustments this time around, because I think if I'm Keefe, I'm not going to go down the exact same way that I've gone down in years past, which is not breaking those two guys up.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. I agree. Yeah.
All right. So, So where are you at with Matthew Nyes today in terms of his chances of making this roster?
Well, they're going to give him a shot in the regular season. Mm-hmm. Like he's going to get, I was listening to you guys, and I mean, it's going to be interesting because like with Matt Murray out, the cap situation is really weird. So like something funky is going to happen for them to bring him in. Like they don't have enough money to sign him. So, I wonder if they play a game like short a player or something here, like maybe the game against Florida, something weird might happen. Mm-hmm. It's funny that Nyes is already down in Florida there waiting. Mm-hmm. Like it's like the schedule maker lined it up where he's going to win an NCAA championship and then just like walk into the Leafs dressing room in Florida.
Get acclimated down there. Good for him.
I think what you do is you play him in the three remaining games. You give him decent minutes and you make a judgment call based on how he looks. But, you know, again, listening to you guys last night, you're right. Like, you don't really want to break up that fourth line. Like, you feel really good about the chemistry that those guys have. So you gotta sit somebody. You're not going to play 13 forwards and five defensemen or something weird. So I don't know where you slot him in, and I don't know, like, what the priority should be in terms of – because realistically in the playoffs, like, it's going to be – you can't really expect too much from the kid. Like it's a lot. I mean, at most, I think what you're going to get from him is 9 or 10 minutes and hope that he brings some energy. But I think where I'm at is he's plays in the regular season games, but probably doesn't play in the playoffs is where I'm at right now.
Yeah. That's where I am too. You're giving guys rest nights every single night at this point. So it's the best of all worlds, right? You're deciding to take out top six members. And you're actually, what I would do is put him in those top six roles. Let him play with good players. Let him get super comfortable. And this has actually been a bit of a key MO, right? Whether it was Ryan O'Reilly showing up, he goes, hey, play with these good guys. Even when Sam Lafferty came to town, let him get some time with Nylander, right? Hey, here's some talent. Here's some ice time. Let's see what you can do in these games. Don't play him. What's the point of trying him out in the fourth line where he would maybe slot in, play him 9 to 10 minutes? Like, that's not... That doesn't help you out. That doesn't give you a better picture. Play him a ton of minutes. I don't know how reluctant a guy like Michael Bunting is going to be as he's entering free agency to sit, or, But yeah, sit Nylander for a game. Sit Yarncroc for a game. Sit Marner again. Do whatever. Keep this revolving door happening. Play him in your top six and take a look with those games. I have a really, 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 really hard time picturing what the scenario is where he steps in and tries to play for the Leafs come playoff time now with the group of forwards that they have, like outside of obviously an injury.
It's an injury, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, we'll put it this way. Let's say someone goes down. Let's say someone in the bottom six goes down. Is he the guy that comes in? Because you look at the other options that they have beyond the 12, and it's like, I don't know. But like, there's not a lot of guys you're really excited about.
No, he's definitely the 13th to me. Like, you're not putting in Steves or anybody. Like, you know, Pontus Holmberg at this moment.
Something's gonna happen to somebody in the first two games, and you're gonna need someone. So, like, that's just always the way that it is. And I'm not just saying that with the Leafs, with everybody. Like, there's gonna be players that are banged up, and so, you know, I think you cross your finger. I think you're right. You play Nyes in good situations, and if he looks completely snowed under, then at least you have that information, right? And you're like, he's not our 13th guy.
Yep.
That's what you're trying to figure out.
Yeah, I think he'd be their 13th guy almost no matter what, though, because even if they had an injury to a center, they have other guys who are in this group that could move over, right? Like, say they lose camp, all right, well, then Lafferty slides over, or Achari slides over, or Kerfoot. Like, they have a bunch of guys who can actually give you center depth. So basically, no matter what, to me, he's going to end up as the 13th guy. He would have to look horrifically bad to me in these last couple of audition games to say, no, Pontus Holmberg is actually ahead of you on the depth chart, buddy. Sorry. Like, and actually, what a blow that would be after all this deadline conversations we had. He's untouchable. And if you watched him and you went, yeah, he's like a Pontus Holmberg-esque type guy right now.
There's a name we haven't heard in a while.
Abruzzese. Abruzzese. Him or Abruzzese is really a toss-up right now in terms of who you'd want in there. I like where they're at. And I think that that fourth line is really doing something. And to me, they do look like they're going to have a actual contribution to this postseason series. Like, they're a fourth line that doesn't look like they're going to get pushed around, that can give you maybe chip one in every once in a while. But yeah, now it does feel like the focus has kind of shifted back up to those top players and going, yeah, that's great. You're expecting a few more goals than four from the bottom six this time around. But yeah, ultimately you're going to have to carry the major scoring run. How do you feel about the Samsonov step lately? Like, are you buying into this? Like, what is your read on that?
I mean, he's been good all year, right? Like, there hasn't, I guess he's taken a step in that, but he's been relatively consistent. What's his save percentage this year? 915, 916? Like, the last I looked, he was like top 10, top 12 in the league in save percentage. Like, he's had a really, really good season.
Yeah.
You know, and he's played a lot of games. He's played more games than people would have expected. Like, the only thing I think you can point to with Samsonov where you're not confident is he doesn't have the track record and he hasn't played a lot in the playoffs. I mean, because I don't think there's not very much you can quibble with this season. He hasn't had a lot of games where he's been brutal. So, I mean, it's been a huge win for them that he's played as well as he has.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at. Like, it's just, does he keep doing it in the playoffs? I mean, I don't know, but he's had a really, really good year.
Yeah. His last like brutal game, quote unquote, was the whole team played poorly, but it was right as he was getting on the plane essentially to go see his son.
Right.
And he was like, I don't care. The game sucked. Yeah. It sucked, and I want to go see my kid. So see you guys in three days.
I haven't seen someone say it kind of the way he kind of said, I have like more important things to think about or something.
Yeah. It was funny because but my technical director, Austin Mackey, he sent it in not knowing the context of the kid. And he was like, whoa. I was like, yeah, man, he had a child. He wasn't saying like, I don't care about hockey right before the playoffs started. He thought we had the most incendiary quote from an athlete like in the last 20 years.
I thought we were in trouble.
Yeah. Austin sent it to us like, did you guys see what Ilya Samsonov said last night? And I was very, very confused until I got it in the morning. I was like, oh, he didn't realize that this was him talking about him having a child.
He said I have more important things to worry about or something like that?
He said that. He's like, I have more important things to worry about right now, or my head isn't here. I'm worried about something else. It was something along those lines. Pretty intense.
Quote. Yeah. Like, I hope he sticks around, and, you know, I think just from a media perspective, if he ends up being the number one for, I don't know, a year or 2 years or something, I think that, and as he's still a young guy, like 25 years old.
Yeah,
like,
he's an RFA.
He could be one of those, like, guys with a personality who, like, you know, is going to be giving us some good fodder to talk about, so.
Man, I never, my ultimate, and I've given myself credit for this a million times before, so it's nothing new here, but like 9 years ago, I was predicting that this was going to happen with goaltenders where they all became running backs, where at age 30, no one would pay them, and that you're going to get two combinations going like, yeah, it's going to be one guy in, it's going to be thunder and lightning all around. Like, you're going to have two guys, two backs, and 30 years old, if anyone gives one a contract, everyone around the game is going to be like, what are you doing? This is the stupidest thing that you could possibly do. Yeah, but that actually does bring me to sort of the secondary question about the goaltending. The goalies that dressed last night, are those the guys that we see for the entire playoffs? Like, this is the actual really interesting part about the Samsonov story is people have more confidence in him right now, and you're right. He's had a great season, and he hasn't had a lot of stinkers, and yeah, it's very, very clear he won the job down the stretch. The Murray stuff completely went away when he was letting in 4+ every single night, and then his coach called him out. But now that Murray's hurt, and we don't really have a ton of clarity in terms of what is going on, or at least last I saw with this, doesn't this kind of feel like a bit of a Freddie Anderson situation to you from a couple of years ago where you go, yeah, you're not getting the net at all. Like, it doesn't matter if Samsonov struggles. You're not in there. They're ride or dying here no matter what happens, and this is going to be the way throughout the entire playoffs. Like, even if there's an injury at this point, it almost feels like it would be Wall.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think in an injury, it's going to depend where Murray's at. But, I mean, they've given him every benefit of the doubt. And, like, the Leafs were even thinking, like, the last 10 games or whatever. They're like, oh, maybe there's still a chance. No, you know, maybe Murray will look really, like, they really wanted that.
I'm convinced they wanted him to. Yeah. Like, they were desperate for him to steal that job for Samsonov, in my opinion.
They wanted that to be the story. And they wanted to have the tandem. They wanted to have two guys that they felt good about going into the playoffs, and which I don't know the last time that they've had that, but you know, I think the league is moving more towards the tandem. I mean, Boston's a great example of, you know, it's look at Carolina. They got three guys and they still don't know who's going to be playing for them in the playoffs.
They have no guys really, but yeah.
Speaking of Freddie Anderson. Yeah. So I still think that there's a scenario. Like if Samsonov's hurt, it's going to be a debate. But again, like you talk about having a good season, Joseph Woll has been fantastic. Like his numbers in the AHL have been, and every time he's played in the, like, I mean, he's going to probably get one of those back-to-back games in Florida and you get another look at him. And I mean, it sounds crazy, but I think like if you ended up with Woll in the playoffs, I don't think that that's necessarily you're done. Because he's got a pedigree and he's been really, really good. And I mean, it almost feels like their number three is in a better place than it's been in a long time here. Like you're not talking about not a Michael Hutchinson situation right now.
No, I completely agree. Listen, I have Woll above Murray. I just do. If it was me, if like let's just say if my life was on the line and they went, hey, which of these two guys do you want tomorrow? I would say the kid who has been making good save after good save and who is not letting in. The whole premise of Matt Murray, and like I talked about this with Kevin Woodley a couple weeks ago, is that he is not supposed to let in the soft goals. That is his thing, is that he's not really the goalie anymore to make what is the saves off of broken plays, the spectacular saves. Actually better crease to crease than I would have anticipated from an analytical standpoint, or an eye test standpoint, that for me anyways. But lately, and one of the things that has really killed me with watching Matt Murray is he has let in some of those softies. Like, think of the goal that he let in that Detroit game before he left. I haven't seen Joe Woll let in one of those. Have you? Like, Joe Woll tripped over himself. That was a bad one. But I think that puck was going in no matter what. Like, that was a 2-on-1. He looks kind of, it's like a blooper reel. If we had a Shaq and a Fool of Hockey, that goes in there, right? But he hasn't let in some aggressively bad goal that I've seen. And yeah, these are tiny, tiny, tiny samples. But Joe Woll, analytically, has graded out as the best of the Leafs' three goaltenders. Like,
you know what's funny with him, too, is that, like, I think he's, like, 14 months younger than Austin Matthews or something.
Yeah,
and I
know
he's only, like, he's not a, like, he, you know, he plays in college and, and you see him in person and, like, he's in really good shape and he does not look like a rookie. He looks like a guy who's, like he's in his prime, really, as an NHL athlete. So I don't think he's going to be intimidated by the moment either.
Yeah, I think he's 24. He's 24, Joe?
I think he's 25 or almost 25.
Okay, well, yeah, either way, he's 24 or 25 years old. Like, yeah, I know, he's not a baby. And people should know this because he's been around for God knows how long at this point. Like, we were watching
the World Juniors a decade ago, it feels like. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah, look, that's the Leafs goalie. He's playing for USA. He's 100. It's like, no. Well, yeah, no, I just feel like the Murray thing is done and that it's very much the way of Freddie Anderson where, yeah, a couple of years ago in that Montreal series, people went, oh, is Freddie working his way back? And will he get a game if the Leafs struggle or they stumble? And it turned out that, no, there was nothing that was going to get him the net. And I feel the same way this time around where there's nothing that's going to get Murray the net short of injuries. And even if it was the case, like, man, they would have to feel somewhat nervous. They would probably do it. They would probably side with Murray over Wall. That's my guess. They go out on something that's more defensible, and he's the guy, and they try to hope the pedigree shows up and the player, and he's not afraid of the moment. But, yeah, I think that if you removed everything, you removed all of their histories and the nameplates and all this different stuff, I think it would almost, at this point, kind of be a no-brainer. Also, Murray, how many different injuries was it this year? Like, it wasn't
at least three.
Like, yeah, but it's like, but they're all different ones. And that's where you go, dude, you are a Band-Aid. And I texted with you a little bit about this because he's got the weird buyout, right? Because Ottawa has the retention of the 25%. So I believe it's something along the lines of if the Leafs buy him out, he's 800 grand, 700, 800 grand on the books next year. And then he's around 2 million the following season. You were saying though, that there's no way they end up doing the buyout. And the more I thought about it, I went, yeah, you're right. There's no way that a team that is this capped out and that has this many salary question marks would ever just have dead cap $2 million on the books, right?
I think there's a couple options. Like either he's hurt and he's LTIR and he's done. I think it's possible. The other possibility is you find
listen, dude, we're not going to play you and no one wants you. So you want to just chill in Toronto where you live and go to Robidoux Island or what?
He goes, the other option is you do the Mrazek, or Arizona or whatever. And maybe you got to retain, there's only 1 year left of the deal, right? So if you got to retain a little bit of it and eat it, maybe you do a double retention going the other way to get rid of. But I think that there's a trade. I mean, I just look at Joseph Woll needs waivers next year coming out of training camp. And with way he's played, like, I feel pretty decent about Samsonov and Woll being your goalies for next year.
Completely agree.
I mean, there's a long way to go, and we want to see what happens in the playoffs and et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, there's a scenario where you can get Samsonov signed for around $3 million.
Yep.
Woll's not making anything. And it's like, boy, you don't have to spend a lot on goal. You feel okay about that tandem.
Yep.
You can allocate some of that money to, I've got a problem where I've already looked at, their cap scenario for next year and for the year after and things like that. And it's like, that looks pretty good. But, as part of that, you got to find a new home for Matt Murray, which is, it feels like where this is going, barring like a resurrection in the playoffs. And, it's probably going to be package an asset with them and send them somewhere else. And maybe you got to eat a million of it or something, but that's better than the buyout.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to happen. The buyout thing like that. People keep pointing to that like it's fine. The thing with Matt Murray, though, is why I don't think it's going to be Robidoux Island is he's 28 years old. Like, he's 28. And I know this latest one is a head injury, but ultimately, God. It's four different injuries this year. Neck, abductor, ankle, and head. Oh, my God. You are made of glass, sir.
This was the biggest concern when they acquired him. It wasn't the recent track record, and it wasn't the salary, and it was all the injury history for me was the biggest concern is that, and I've seen people say like, Kyle Dubas nailed the goaltending, and it's like, I mean, he did with Samsonov, but the Murray situation, they spent $4.7 million on a guy who
I wouldn't
whose
say that's
body just
nailing
can't do it.
Like, I no, wouldn't say not. Nailing it is the guy that makes almost $5 million and you're going to the playoffs. And I'm saying,
put the
24-year-old guy in who's got, eight games this year.
I go back to last offseason, and it's like, I still think they should have made two bets like Samsonov. And then if you're in trouble at midseason, you acquire a goalie. I think that's what they should have done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's the other case. And by the way, I make no apologies for looking forward to the next season stuff with these goaltenders because, of course, there's stuff like no one is confusing the import of the moment and losing it going, next year. No, but you're right. That is going to be a big question mark is what happens with this guy and the money that he has and how if I'm another team, though, I'm not sure because everyone looks at the Mrazek thing and they go, Dubas will be able to get out of it. And I go, I think that was a really lucky one-off scenario with Mrazek. Yeah. And that if you look back on that too, Chicago, what a really stupid move that was. That was just an all-time Dumbo decision. But if you're another organization now with the Leafs, you will hold their feet to the fire a little bit more and go, yeah, no, do it. Buy him out. Have that $2 million dead money on the cap, because you're going to have to make this decision and nobody wants Matt Murray. And what, like, we're not doing that. And who has cap space? And yeah, I think it will be a little different. Maybe I'm wrong, but yeah, I think it'll be a little harder to move Matt Murray actually than people think, considering like using Mrazek as a precedent.
What was getting Mrazek a dumb decision if you get Connor Bedard though? Like,
yeah,
I mean,
well,
like that's,
I guess, that, but that's the Galaxy brain stuff, because I look at that and go, whatever, if you were Chicago, you still could have just essentially signed some bum. Like, look at all the bum goalies that are out here right now. Like you and I have joked about this, but this is like the number one reason against expansion, truly, outside of lack of interest for the product, is how could you possibly add another three goalies when this is, go look at, the funnest game you can play as a hockey fan is go look every single night at who is in net for all of these teams. Like, you do not know who they are.
I don't know who some of these guys are. No. Like, I follow the league. I watch the AHL. Like, and sometimes, like, you know, it's funny playing fantasy this year and you go, it's like, oh, I'm going to do I need a goalie. I got to do a daily pickup. And you look at who like the seven starters are and it's like, holy cow, who are available to pick up. It's like, who are these guys? You know, where did they come from? Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I think it's easier to make a Matt Murray disappear trade now because it feels like every year now there's going to be like five or six teams that are tanking that just don't care.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think that also just, you can get one of these lottery ticket guys and potentially have it work out for you because there's so many of the same that it's like, don't spend $4.5 million on a Matt Murray. Go out there and do the Samsonov thing and then grab some other lottery ticket. Who knows who ends up hitting the market? I have no clue, but
100%.
Some guy that was on the Sharks last year, but that's actually the most fun is it's the West where you go look at the crappy teams out West because there's more tank teams out there and you go look at their guys every night, like who's in net for Arizona and who's in net for San Jose and Anaheim. And you're like, boy, this guy is even real. This is actually, you guys dress the E-Bug, but none of us out East are awake paying attention. So no one calls it. You're like, Prostorov, that's our guy tonight. Get in there, Prostorov. And he's like, definitely. It's the equipment manager wearing goalie equipment. And we're like, no, that makes sense. It checks out. We know Prostorov.
A bunch of cats balled together with tape tied around them. I mean, like Jed Greaves steps in there and he's a kid. He's 22 years old and look how good he played.
He
the quality of like the high end prospects and the AHL guys, I think that's only going to continue. And all of a sudden there's going to be this pool of you go beyond the 60 guys that are in the NHL and there's going to be another 20, 25 that are really good. Mm-hmm. That's when you're going to see it. Like we're seeing a real cycle through of like you're talking about of who are these guys. I think that that's the new normal.
James, always appreciate the time. Thanks for stepping away from your family on a holiday that I forgot it was a holiday. Take care, buddy.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter, man. There he goes. James Myrtle, senior managing editor at The Athletic. I think what would Matt Murray have to do to actually be a Toronto Maple Leaf next year? Not Robidoux Island Toronto Maple Leaf. There'd have to be an injury to Samsonov. He'd have to be healthy. He'd have to step in and he'd have to steal games for the Toronto Maple Leafs against the Tampa Bay Lightning or the Boston Bruins.
See, those second two are the ones that I'm worried about.
But it's just like, are you kidding? Like, that is the most delusional thing at this point you can think of. Yes, four different injuries in the last year for Matt Murray. Four different injuries.
He's
going to step in cold, which last time he did that, he stepped in cold and was a four goal a night guy against bad teams in regular season games. He's going to step in ice cold, play Tampa or Boston, and lock it down. It's the sports story of the year. So, yeah, it's like Tiger Woods winning the Masters and Matt Murray. Those are the two guys where just like, they're hurt.
Since 2017, he's missed time for 17 different injuries.
Yeah, that's an insane.
Yeah, it's like lower body, upper body, list. Lower body, concussion.
Anyway, that's 17 different injuries. Wow. Anyway, quick break. Let's come back, give you a best bet you can use for tonight.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, you know what time it is. By the way, I'm so choked. I didn't talk about any Blue Jays stuff today. Brandon Belt, for God's sakes, So I gave out that I thought there was really good value on Gausman to have the first strikeout. Mm. And there was. And the Jays started that first inning and nobody struck out. I was like, yes, this bat is looking great. And then I forgot that if the Jays got hits, that Brandon Belt would get to the dish in the first inning. And then the inning ends with his strikeout. And then, of course, Gausman steps up there and he strikes somebody out because that's why the value is there. So, yeah, thanks a lot, Brandon Belt, for costing the best bet yesterday. I also gave out the Chapman home run, which was plus 450. It was a tough one to do. You know what I'm doing tonight? I'm going back to the plus numbers, all right? Logan Gilbert is on the mound for the Mariners, and they've had a tough start, but they're playing the Guardians. Logan Gilbert has been incredible against the Guardians to start his career. He's been nasty against them. 20 strikeouts and 23 innings of work, only 21 hits, 313 ERA and 4 starts. I like Logan Gilbert tonight. I think there's decent value on the Mariners at plus 112 as dogs, so that's what I'm rolling with. That is Best Bets brought to you by Betano Sportsbook, the global sports betting book of the year. The game starts now. Head over to the podcast-only portion.
The warmer.
Just like, yeah, Betano, shout out to you for hopefully giving me a ton of money. Okay? That would be ideal.
I think that's the goal.
Yo, Betano, the game starts now. Pay me now is what it's going to be anyways. All right. What do we miss? What's going on, fellas? What do you guys want to do
today? This weekend, JD, I want to talk to you about this. UFC 287.
Yeah, you're all jacked up
in
on
Miami. I'm super jacked up for it.
You're literally the kid from Ricky Bobby where he's like, I'm all jacked up on Mountain Dews. Joe always comes in here. He's like, what do you think about UFC? I'm like, man, all right, fine. What
I'm going to count you like a spider monkey.
Yeah, exactly. That's Joe every day where he comes in.
I wanted to get your thoughts. Izzy, Pajeda part two, and then obviously Burns and Masvidal. Mm-hmm. Do you think Izzy has a chance to take the belt back, or definitely. Is Pajeda gonna? Well, I mean, like, is Izzy your favorite over Pajeda?
What are the odds right now?
The odds right now are Izzy is minus 135.
Yeah,
Pajeda's plus 115.
Isn't he favored? Yeah, Izzy's probably
is he your favorite.
Yeah, kind of. This is a weird one for me because I wonder if. Actually, when I was talking earlier on the show about guys who have that one choker blockage, mm-hmm. if this is sort of one of Izzy's ones where it's just a bit of a mental block. Obviously, the matchup has been tougher for him because it really does expose. Man, this is the thing about Izzy. He's been exposed as a guy who doesn't have the best takedowns and among the greatest guys that we've seen, mm-hmm. he is a modern day, more one dimensional dude than we're used to seeing. We're not used to seeing guys like him and McGregor are kind of the two where you go, man, the wrestling, there's just like not really any wrestling, but they're dominant champions. And they face guys that do that who are bigger than them. Like for Conor, it was Habib. Mm-hmm. And for Izzy, it was Blachowicz where he tried to go up.
Yeah.
And he just could not get up off his back.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't think Pereira.
Or Poetan, his nickname.
Poetan.
10 out of 10.
Pereira. I keep getting it worse.
Pajeda.
Pajeda. I don't think that he is going to be able to take down Izzy. And mm-hmm. I think on the feet, Izzy will be able to outpoint him and outscore him. It's pretty clear, dude. Yeah. Don't get rocked by that left hook.
Yeah.
Don't eat that left hook into sleepy time.
That video I sent you the other day of him when he was kickboxing?
Dude,
oh my goodness.
Can hurt you. He's a big fella.
Yeah.
He is much bigger than Izzy in terms of his skeletal structure, his mass. He is a massive guy. So if Izzy can avoid getting crunched, he should be able to win this on points. There's a reason why he's a favorite. So I think that he is that. I'm reluctant to bet on him because you keep losing to the same dude and you're
three
the favorite.
Now.
And I go, what am I doing here? Why am I overthinking this? Mm-hmm. But no, I just think that he's the better points better. And it's like, if he can get this thing, if this fight can go the distance, Izzy will win.
Yeah.
So that would be my suggestion, actually, is if you are going to bet this fight, what is it on Betano for him to win by decision? It's probably not that much more, but it's probably it's definitely going to be a plus number.
Let's check.
Yeah, give me that. If you're going to bet Izzy, you got to bet via decision, in my opinion. Now it's clean. He's going to clean knock him out with some elbow. Pajeda is going to go down by
well,
elbow.
Well, Pajeda also in the first fight, too, like the kicks were massive. Like he was crunching Izzy's legs, and that led to the TKO.
For sure. But I thought that Izzy sort of gassed out a little bit as the fight went on. And, so anyway, Israel Adesanya by decision is plus 200. So that's what I would be betting. I'm faster than Joe, honestly. It's kind of embarrassing for you, Joe.
My thing was loading for
Yeah, no, but it's just, Joe, that's your job, okay? I know you tell the ladies, like we were saying earlier, like, I have a podcast. It's like, you're my research
guy. I have a
full-time job. Yeah, yeah. You won't very soon if I cook you again on getting a number for me.
I should just use my phone. Like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, well, excuse time with Jobo. What do you know? Anyway, I think Izzy is obviously very much a live favorite. I think I'm going to bet the bye decision. Mm-hmm. I'm probably going to feel like an idiot, and Pajeda is going to end up winning by some kind of a knockout later in the third or fourth round. But yeah,
that would be funny.
Yeah, I don't care about the Masvidal stuff. I'm sorry. Jorge,
even like plus 380 live dog, nothing for you.
So he is not winning this fight.
No, okay.
No, so I'm not betting him. There's no shot. Gil looks awesome, and the retirement stuff, and I should have had Jorge on the podcast this week. I know I could have, but I was with my sister yesterday when I had to do, and I couldn't line it up, but. Man, he's had an awesome career, and like he's still gonna be able to market himself once this thing's all said and done. But after he lost to Colby, the juice was over. He had an awesome run. He was a long time dude, right? Mm-hmm. He's had a great run. Bellator, street fights, backyard barbecue stuff, like UFC moment, Askren knockout, great career for Masvidal. Made a lot out of it.
Yeah,
but got a title fight where to Usman, right? The foot stomping. Fight Island. That was a big one.
Yeah. BMF title.
He's had a great BMF. Career. Yeah, BMF. Like, he's had a great career for the actual level of guy he is, which is not elite.
He's an entertainer.
And when I say elite, I mean he'd beat the living piss out of all of us. I'm saying elite.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all three of us at once, game bred, immediate. Like, it's
death,
not even, he's
death.
Not even coming out of that being like, whoof, that was tough.
No, like, we got Pete, though. No. Game changer.
No, yeah.
Well, for us. And that puts us down to three.
Honestly, I think we're worse off with Pete.
Sorry, Pete.
Like, I think if we fought Game Bread and Pete was part of the mix,
it would hurt us somehow.
Yeah, like it would not improve our odds even in the slightest. Anyway,
No, that's me buying into the marketing too. The plus 380 number, it's Masvidal. I love him. But yeah, I think you're right. You're logically, you sound correct.
I think that Ariel Helwani asked the best question on his podcast when it came to the Izzy stuff is what happens if he loses? Like, where does he go from here? Like, what's the move for Adesanya?
Do you think
it's not to go up?
No, it's definitely not.
Izzy won't go up. Do you think like, Pajeda would go up if he has the belt and become a double champ?
Maybe, but like, no, but that's the thing is like, man, you go up there.
Because then what does Izzy do?
Here's the problem, too, is both of these guys kind of feel like a bit of paper champions because it's just like there's Khamzat looming around.
Yeah, that's true.
And he could just show up and be like, I'm a game wrecker for the two of you. Anyway, go listen to Ariel's podcast because, his was really just awesome. I mean, he's the best at this, obviously, but he is his podcast previewing this was incredible. It was a really, really fun listen. Anyways, what's next?
So the Toronto Raptors, big weekend for them. Like we're going into the play-in, and it appears that Chicago is
going to be the matchup. It's the lock. Like it's
the only hope is that Atlanta would lose both their games and Toronto wins both their games, but that would require the Hawks just to completely lose out. The Sixers, they have the Sixers and the Celtics will probably be resting in the last game as well. And if they even win one, then it's wraps because they have the tiebreaker. So.
Mm-hmm.
Raptors Bulls, do you have any thoughts ahead
Sixers
of that?
Sixers do still have something to play for tonight, though, against the Cavs because they want to stay from the Cavs. So if the Hawks lose tonight, there is a chance the Raptors could get to the eighth seed.
No, man, what is going to happen though is the same thing with Raptors and Hawks. Both of them are going to play their final games of the year against teams that will go full rest.
The Bucks and the Celtics,
and they will be playing for something. And the idea that the Hawks would choke against a Celtics team that is playing literally not a soul.
You have not followed this Hawks team this year, they are capital F frauds.
Yeah. I don't doubt that. I actually think the Raptors are better than the Hawks. Mm-hmm. I think this is, it's funny with the Raptors because like I think they're better than all these playing teams, Miami, Atlanta. Like I think on the Raptors' best day, the Bulls, they cook all these guys.
Do you think they're better than Brooklyn?
Yes.
In the sixth seed, New York in the five?
Dude. Yeah, I do. I think they're better than New York.
So at their best, they could be the fifth best team.
They are. That's what they are. The Raptors on their best, most consistent day, and since they've made these trades, especially since they got Poeltl, they're the fifth best team in the NBA. In the East.
I was about to say.
No, but honestly, in the NBA, it's not even that much of a big drop-off. Because it's like if the Raptors were in the West, they'd be like maybe the Raptors, they'd have a path.
Five seed,
why can't they be
seed?
The third seed? They're better than the Kings.
That's what I'm saying. Phoenix is 100% better than them, and you give the respect to the Warriors.
And then,
I would say the Clippers are better than the Raps. Denver, Raptors, I played Denver a little soon. Like yeah. the Raps, Denver got lucky to split that with the Raps this year. Anyway, my point is that I actually think the Raps are a top 10 team in the NBA. I think that mm-hmm. they are a top 5 team in the East. But what is that, to quote our good friend, what does that even do for you? What does that even do for you?
Not too much.
Like, this is the thing that pisses me off about the Raps is that it's like, cool, you guys are good.
Yeah.
You're not great. And you have no direct path to improve this team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is the path for you guys to get up a level? Because people keep talking about Siakam, like he's going to keep going up, up, up. It's like, no, Siakam is really, really good. Okay. Like he is awesome. He's an awesome player. He's a fringy third all NBA guy.
Yeah.
OG is one of the best defensive. I think the best defensive player in the NBA. Awesome. Scotty mm-hmm. Barnes has room to grow. I don't think that year three Scotty Barnes is going to go toe-to-toe with Giannis Antetokounmpo in a playoff game. And we're going to be confused as to who is going to elevate their... Like, that's not going to be... He's not going to be in the Tatum-Giannis mix.
No, okay? He's not going to be in the Embiid conversations.
And so it's like, yeah, cool. You guys are the plucky team that is probably going to get out of the play-in and torch your draft position even more. And you're going to go into the offseason with an even more frustrating decision, which is, hey, we're yeah. good. Like, what? How do we really take a step... Like, you're too good to really take a step back by moving one piece out. I think that this is sort of the thing where you look back at even the decisions at the deadline and you go, well, kind of some of it makes at least a little sense because you have to remove too many pieces from the Jenga tower
yeah.
for it to topple. Like yeah. you got to pull Fred, you got to pull Siakam, you got to, like, there's
Gary's
too many,
in the mix
yeah,
too.
There's too many good guys. And then, yeah, it just, they're such a frustrating team, man. I don't know. Like,
so regardless of what happens, it's just
weirdly, again, fifth best team in the East, in my opinion, one of the worst, like,
situations,
off seasons that you could possibly have, given all the parameters of the guys needing money. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, Scottie Barnes, an awesome building block. OG Anunoby is an awesome player. But in terms of, yeah, mm-hmm. your position to move in one direction or the other, it's really, really difficult. Anyways, unless they actually do the thing of, like, go nuclear, but yeah. I don't think they're going
to
do that.
And that is easier to do in the off season in their defense than at the deadline,
yeah,
right?
my one thing that I was thinking of, though, was with this Luka situation and how bad it is how fun would it be if Luka became the guy that they wanted to move off of? And it was like,
they kept Kyrie.
No. I'm saying, well, Kyrie's a free agent, but I'm saying yeah. like, I wonder if Toronto would have the best package if they were like, listen, give us a Godfather deal for Luka. He wants out. And Toronto was like, okay, we'll give you like Barnes, Siakam.
I'd give up,
you know,
half the, like, city for Luka.
You don't have your first round pick this year, but it's like, yeah. But it's like Barnes and Siakam starting offer for Luka.
Mobley and Garland for the Cavs.
No, but they're not doing that. They wouldn't do
that. If it was for Luka, you don't think they would do it for Luka?
I don't think they would do that. I honestly do not think that they would do that.
Mobley's
they have
too
no
important.
First either.
Mobley's too important to, like, their defensive future, too. Like,
anyway,
he's just...
I think that if the Raptors came to the table with Siakam and Scottie Barnes for Luka Doncic to, like, start the trade discussions if he had to do it, they would be in the driver's seat. And that is what I think is interesting about Toronto, is like, they still are really well positioned for a Kawhi-like trade where they would go, yeah, we're rolling all these assets over and we're going to pay these guys on a luxury tax because we're just biding our time
mm-hmm.
for that moment again. And everyone that's pissed off about how we're treading water, how we're doing this, it's like, you'll see when Luka becomes available.
The Luka to Raptor, Luka to Toronto.
But if you remember, there was a little bit of a time, we all forget, that people weren't sure about what Giannis's future was going to be.
That's true.
And the Raps felt like they were really positioned to try to poach if something was going to go down.
That's true.
And that's how I feel right now, where they roll these guys over, and it's not to win a championship with this group. It's that their combination of players, they would go, yo, who do you want, Dallas? Mm-hmm. Like, what is going to get this thing done? Because we'll give you firsts, we'll give you whatever to get Luka Doncic. Like, we'll make that happen.
No untouchables.
And we have Scottie Barnes and Pascal Siakam, who we can start the discussion with.
Yeah. The idea of Dallas moving off Luka, though, is
no, it's not.
It's crazy.
Bro, it's probably not. It's very, very unlikely, yeah. especially given
Mark Cuban. I agree.
I'm just saying, like, Dallas is in, you want to talk about franchises that are in weird no man's land.
Yep.
Like, they don't have really significant moves they can make one way or another.
Yeah.
Yeah, Luka Doncic, this is a league where guys can get frustrated pretty quick. You think Luka is going to miss the playoffs again and or struggle again next year and feel like he's just treading water in Dallas and not say some stuff about it? Anyway.
Yeah, no.
It's hard not to swear in the podcast-only portion, I will tell you. Anyway.
We're allowed to, aren't we?
Nah, so let's keep it clean.
All right.
Let's keep it clean.
JD.
I don't want to have to put up... Listen, the thing is that you have to put up an advisory when you swear, and it's not worth it.
I don't know how to do that even. So let's not even get into that. Yeah, my
crack staff. Hey, check out my crack staff over here. One, my researcher who can't research, my editor who can't edit. What's next?
You mentioned it briefly, JD. The walk and talk in regards to Rory.
Yeah. What's up?
Are you a fan of the walk and talk? I personally hate it. Max Homa, man, yesterday he was struggling on it. You could tell he wanted to rip the AirPod out. Where are you at with the walk and talk?
I actually really like it.
Oh, man.
Except for at the Masters.
Okay. Agreed. Like, do it at the Texas Fortnite Open, whatever, you know? The Masters is the Masters.
I just didn't, again, it's a really tough look when Rory, the choker at the Masters, and Homa, the golfer, all the golfers say is the man, but can't translate to the majors. Mm-hmm. Those two guys did it, and those two guys, sucked. Anyway, I'm a fan of more access and trying new things in broadcasts. I'm not sanctimonious about this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, that it did feel awkward, and it was just such a soft target to make fun of Rory when he started doing it and he was sucking. And I obviously sent text messages to the Rory lovers like, man, the worst part is I was a Rory lover again. And then he had to say that stuff about Liv. They're my best friends. And I was like, nah.
Yeah, like I still see them. Outside of tournaments.
Thank you. Goodbye. When he did F Phil in full swing at the end, I was like, yes. Roar, dog. I'm back, baby. Because I had a Rory moment. I had a Rory moment when he was younger. Mm. I actually enjoyed Pudgy Rory. I was like a pudgy, young, plucky Rory. You guys remember that Nike golf commercial?
I that's what I was about to bring up.
I was roared up then. I was roaring. I was roaring in the streets at that time. I was like, damn, that commercial made me feel something. Man, Nike can really just, they can.
When he said that, it reminded me of Radim Zohorna the other night.
Yeah, no, making me Zohorny. Anyway, what's next?
So the journal magazine Neurology posted a study about sleep habits.
Oh, God, this pissed me off so much.
Yeah, and they say that 9 hours of sleep or more can lead to serious health issues, including like strokes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And 7 hours is the CDC recommended average. Okay. Why'd you say you hated it?
Because, like, this is starting to feel like eggs, where eggs is just like used to be. It's eggs the healthiest thing, and it's like eggs lead to cholesterol, and you're like, oh, okay. This like only eat the egg whites. Okay. They're so healthy. You live forever if you eat eggs, and then it's like eggs will kill you. Like, but it's like up and down with some of the sleep science. But the other thing is, it's like when did sleep become just cigarettes? Where it's like if you don't sleep enough, cancer, death. If you sleep too much now, cancer, death. Like, okay, I just was trying to have a nap. And then they're like, napping will kill you. Don't sleep.
Oh,
but you have
8.1 hours of sleep a day?
Don't sleep. Death. But if you do sleep, no, track your sleep and your don't take this. That doesn't give you real sleep. You got to be rest. You got to reset. I'm like, can I just?
Yeah.
You guys are trying to help me sleep. You're telling me about the importance. And now all I do is lay awake at night going, I'm a dead man.
If I fall asleep now,
I looked at a screen an hour before I went to bed. I'm a dead man.
Oh, I hate those.
Like, no, that's what I'm saying.
I hate those.
I need the Men in Black stick for all the sleep stuff I've learned. I need it gone. No, I need it wiped from my brain.
Well, the amount of times you see like on like Twitter and whatever, it's like if you look at a screen like 30 to 45 minutes before bed, your eyes will fall out of your head. And I'm like,
I don't want it. I don't want any more of this. And now too much sleep. Like every once in a while I do try to really sleep because I'll admit it. I'm more of a 6 hour a guy night.
Yeah, I'm around there as well.
I'm about a 6 hour guy night. It's just who I've always been. It's who we'll always be. I don't fall asleep easily. And I know that people are always like, well, why don't you meditate and why don't you do less screens? I'm like, why don't you meditate and do less screens? All right.
I work in sports.
These are my night friends. All right. These are my friends of the evening.
Also, you work in sports.
Yeah, I know.
Like, stuff happens.
It's impossible. Yeah.
Well, if you add the naps to the 6 hours we get, JD, it equals 8.
No, but that's the thing. The naps, they say.
Do you nap every day?
It's a nap that'll kill you.
You have to nap every day.
No, I don't nap every day. What are you talking about? I like Austin. You have to nap every day. It's like, no, man. I'm an adult. I do not have to nap every day.
I nap like once a week.
This is where Europe's got it right, man. Just take 2 hours off in the middle of the day, have a little siesta. Like,
anyway, I feel bad even doing this topic because some guy is listening to this right now being like, what's JD saying about naps killing you? It's like, yeah, dude, look it up. You can just find stuff
the science
on sleep right now. That's like all of it is essentially, unless you're getting a full uninterrupted sleep that's between 7 and 8 hours now is what they're telling you.
Yeah.
Everything else is going to kill you.
Well, it's so obvious. Like, sleep makes you healthy.
Yeah.
Like, we get it.
Yeah, but no, but Naps did have a hot moment where it was like athletes and peak performance, and they all, it was like, oh, they got to sleep and they're going, and then all of a sudden Naps came bad and Naps are good. It just is. It's all over the place. And now 9 hours is bad for you. I'm guessing they're saying like every night, 9 hours. Like, again, if you're having one-offs of these things, it's no big deal, but yeah. Perpetually bad sleep is very bad for you.
So it's like 9 or more hours consistently.
Which is for the whole insomniacs point. Like me is the worst information to be taking in, because all we think of now is like, I already knew I was going to be tired. I already knew I was going to have a cranky day.
Now you're going to die.
And now going to have colon cancer. Sick.
Now I'm dead.
Yeah, exactly.
I wake up. Yeah. Oh, shoot.
Now I'm going to see a doctor in a couple weeks and be like, we're going to have to take yards of intestine from you. Anyway, that was gross. Let's keep it moving. What do we got next?
Well, should we move on to another gross thing? The Sudbury Cadbury cream egg sandwich.
I don't even know what this is.
Do you see that?
No.
They just put Cadbury cream eggs on like an Italian bun at Subway, and they're selling it. And it's like their new.
At Subway?
Yeah. Austin brought it up to me before the show as well.
Could be a sponsor of the show.
Oh, good point by you. I think this is a situation of they asked if they could, not if they should. Because, JD, you got to look at the pictures of this thing, man. It is an interesting contraption. Subway, please sponsor the show. So I can say what I really feel.
What a feeling.
I love Austin coming on the mic.
And Subway was listening to that, and they were like, he better not say anything bad. And these are like, it's an interesting contraption. Subway, please sponsor the show. They're like, all right, we'll sponsor the show. Good pitch, Austin. Good pitch.
I'll give you my phone number later, Subway, if you need it.
Yeah. Good pitch. Here's what I'll say. I think that some of these guys, like, obviously all this is so that we talk about it.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they want free advertisement. And one of the best way to do it is to get people to be polarized and angry on socials. And that's the algorithm. And that's unfortunate in terms of the times we live in. It's not like uncommon practice. This has always been something that advertising agencies have done. It's like try to elicit a reaction from someone. But yeah, it's unfortunate that our Twitter algorithms and our Instagram and our TikTok are all geared towards people commenting on stuff. And usually what are comments. It's not like, way to go, Subway. I love Cadbury cream eggs.
I don't think there was a lot of anger. It was more, people were perplexed.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, is people, you got the real pulse of this thing, eh?
I'm all over the story.
People were not angry about the
He's
Cadbury.
The inside scoop.
The Cadbury sandwich did not elicit a feelings of anger so much as people being perplexed.
But it's interesting contrast.
They sat around and said, this is a mystery of our time. Why would Subway do this thing?
Speaking like old English.
5 years later, there's going to be documentaries on this thing. Yeah, anyways, it's obviously just a gross sandwich. No one would eat that. You'd take the eggs out.
I will say this, though, that
I am a fan of a Cadbury cream egg.
Oh, they are very good.
Like, some people think it's gross. I disagree.
No, Cadbury's good.
But there's
good.
Something that as like an adult you never get. Because who's giving me a Cadbury cream egg now? You know?
No,
like,
you got to buy myself
a Kinder egg.
But that's for Joe, he's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I live at home. My mama gives me Cadbury.
I do my Easter egg.
They leave one on my bedstand every single morning.
It's egg time. I wake up every day. But for us, the adults who are out here in the streets.
My Cheerios.
We have no more eggs coming our way. You don't buy as a single man a Cadbury cream egg.
Yeah, you can.
No, you can't.
You can't?
That's a faux pas.
I can.
No, that's a faux pas. You can't go in there. You got to pretend you have kids. You got to go in there and get a bunch of them. Be like, oh, my kids are going to really love Easter this year. That's
He's
going
to like loudly announce it to the whole store.
It's kind of like when you go buy Halloween candy. And
just for yourself.
I live in an apartment building. And it's kind of like you have to announce it. You're like, boy, these are the ones the kids go crazy for.
You have to say it to the person
next to you. Kids go crazy
season.
For Kit Kat.
They're
going to
love it this year.
As I'm walking out of the grocery store with just, bags of it. Yeah.
Just a full fist of Kit Kat.
Just rolling out of there. Oh, the kids will be pleased. I hope I don't run out. Do you think I should get another bag so I don't run out? Like, you have to lie. I think I almost believe kids are coming to my house when I'm buying that candy. But yeah, no, you've
deluded yourself to the point of no return.
You cannot buy a Cadbury. Like, imagine buying yourself a chocolate bunny as an adult.
I bought eight of them for my eight nephews.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
I was going to say, you're buying it for someone.
Anyway, what's next?
You lied to me. So Tyreek Hill was going viral.
Send me pictures
this week.
Of you at JD Bunkers if you're just following along. I want to see
if you buy a Cadbury cream egg.
Grown adults. Men or women.
There's nothing wrong with it, guys. There's nothing wrong with it.
I advocate for
it. Do they even come in ones? They come in threes?
No, ones.
I think you can get in ones.
Yeah. What do you know? You don't do the shopping.
I do the shopping sometimes.
Mama, can you pick up some eggs?
Anyway. Mom, can you take the Benz out and get me an egg?
Yeah, exactly. All right, what's next? Anyway, let's see one more.
Tyreek Hill, he appeared on Sports Radio 810 in Kansas City on Wednesday, said that he's going to finish out his career with Miami, which would take to 2025. He's 31 years old at that point, and then he said he's going to retire. And he wants to get involved in the video game space, get involved in the gaming corporation, stuff like that.
Yeah. All right, whatever. Anyway, all I have to say to this is, sure, Tyreek, whatever. Like, let's see it when it actually happens. Guys love being like, I could leave. He's one of those guys. He's a diva. This is a diva move. Tyreek, I think fairly actually, probably thinks like people don't talk about me enough. Like he was with Mahomes and he was the man and people love him. He's the cheetah. Like everybody knows who he is.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like from a great receiver standpoint that we discuss him in certain ways.
I feel like you hear about Justin Jefferson a lot more than Tyreek.
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying.
Is like, and Tyreek to me is just like in that class of guy all time. And for whatever reason, people kind of
like an all-time season last year.
Yeah, it feels like
incredible.
People tier him a little bit lower. And I'm like, no. He's a game-breaking talent. And I just think he likes to, as we were joking about earlier, he likes to be a part of the conversation. And so he's trying to inject this one a little bit. Yeah, I don't really anything to this. If he's 31 years old, I don't think Tyreek Hill is retiring from football. If there's a big fat contract waiting for him there, bro, you can do both. So if he does, good for him. It'll suck.
Yeah,
but
his thing was like, I want to play 10 years in the NFL and then move on to other business ventures.
I don't even know what else to say about this. It's like, all right, yeah, like maybe. All right, one more.
One more?
Yeah.
Diddy paying Sting $5,000 a day.
Yeah, I saw this.
For using an uncleared sample on I'll Be Missing You.
How? Okay. This is why I should have read more about this. Did you guys read anything about this?
I looked it up, and that's as far as I saw. They just uncleared sample. They're paying $5,000 a day.
I don't think this is fake news. I think this is real news. Either way, $5,000 a day.
Yep. That is $1.8 million a year.
Which, when you say it like that to me, a rich guy, it actually sounds weirdly way better. Like $1.8 million a year for Diddy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, okay. $5,000 a day weirdly sounds like, oh my God, $1.8 million a year. I'm like, yeah, whatever.
I
don't know why that is in my brain, but it's definitely that way. But here's what I cannot believe about this song. Diddy wasn't like a nobody when he put that out. Like he was already like he was already a guy.
Mm-hmm.
That was his breakout. That was when it was like a whole different echelon.
Yeah.
But how the hell did he think that he could get away with that?
Yeah, he was already, because that was...
You didn't steal that from, like, some no-name. You stole it from
Sting.
You thought you were going to just like, Diddy, should we clear this with Sting that you can use one of his, like, most famous songs? He's like,
we'll just give him $1.8 million a year for the rest of my life.
Rather than ask permission, let's beg for forgiveness. It's like, nah.
Nah.
How long did that song come out, though?
1997?
Is that a guess? It sounds right.
No, I'm looking at it.
It is. Okay, because I was going to say, if that's a guess, I think you, like,
dude, that was before I was born.
Because I was going to say, I was in elementary school when this song came out. Like, I remember this song coming out. And this, actually, you know what's funny? That song is the first time that I learned about sampling. Because I loved that song. And then your parents, like, my boomer parents, my dad, who obviously did not love hip-hop, was like, that's not his song, you know? I was like, huh?
Yeah.
He definitely did that to me.
I wonder if it was the first time that I
That's the song by Sting, Police. You know what that is? And I was like, I have no idea. He's like, hello, we're going to listen to the original. I was like, this sucks compared to... It's like, Diddy should give Sting, or Sting should give Diddy $2,000 a year for making people like my age know who Sting was. By the way, Sting, still funniest thing ever, was when he played the All-Star Game halftime here.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Just insane. NBA All-Star Weekend. Here's Desert Rose. Unbelievable. And there were just some old white dudes in the suites going... Yes! Sting!
Between that and Nelly Furtado singing the national anthem, it's the best musical performance of an All-Star game
but
ever.
Nelly Furtado, but she's just singing the anthem. NBA singing. All-Star halftime performance. And don't ever say anything about my sweet baby, Nelly Furtado.
Oh, that's your girl?
I love her.
Oh, okay.
Dude,
Hand
Nelly
up.
Furtado. I'm Like a Bird music video.
You'll
possibly top 10 crush I've ever had on a woman in my life.
It's a great music video.
So hot.
Yeah, it's a good music video.
Like, I loved her. Don't speak of her
it's
that way.
It's a solid
way.
Music
Nelly
video.
Nelly Furtado to JD is Sydney Sweeney
to
me.
Nelly Furtado, I hold a special place in my heart. All time on the top tier. She's on the crush list. Mm. I loved her. I loved Nelly Furtado.
But Sting.
Sting... Don't ever compare him to my sweet baby girl, Nelly Furtado, okay? Ever. Don't ever do that again. Sting at the NBA halftime was hilarious. I was there, and nobody cared, and it was genuinely, like, The best part was Drake was in the house and people went, Drake, you're going to swoop in and save this thing, right? He's like, I'm not coming a million feet off that stage. I will not be.
I'm going to be in my box away from the stage.
I remember literally looking at Drake going, when are you getting up there? When are you going to go up the stage? And then they go, Sting was just a joke. It was just a little, ha, 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 ha. We're just having some fun with Sting.
I will add, Brooks Koepka's now 10 under.
Yeah, no, Koepka is
stretching his lead.
Who told you to bet on Koepka on Tuesday, JD?
I'll
take the credit. Thank you.
I love that. He's like, who told you about Koepka on Tuesday?
Clearly, he didn't listen,
Austin,
Joe.
You've been off all week.
I not in the group text.
Yeah.
I love how you can hear him turn his mic off. You can hear the click every time he says a take, and then boom.
Lunatic behavior. I missed you. No, honestly, I actually really missed Austin this week.
No, so did I.
Yeah, I really missed Austin this week, and I was glad you're back, dude.
I saw his text in the group chat, and he's like, why is he in the game? Very mad right now.
Yeah, no, that was the best.
I loved it.
No, Will Barton being in the game with under 4 minutes to go against the Celtics was absurd. Nick, let's have a conversation about that.
That's the thing that you can't replace Austin in our show, is that he's the number one, like, true diehard sports fan that I love talking to, where, like...
Sometimes.
No, yeah, you have the craziest takes, but that's what I love about sports, is when people, like, this is what sucks about calling things a hot take era, right, where everything's a take.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, you're supposed to have an irrational take sometimes about sports.
That's
the way it's supposed to go. It's what's supposed to be fun, is you say some dumb stuff about sports, mm-hmm. and it's supposed to just disappear, and now, for whatever reason, it's like, we're going to hold on to this forever and ever and be like, remember, you're the guy who said this. And you're like,
As if they also don't have their own takes.
Yeah, because last week it was that way, and this week it's this way now, okay? Like,
yeah.
I guess you just watch the game, and you're like, no opinions. Like, that sucks.
Oh, that's the funniest, when people bring up old takes, and I'm like, well, the situation's changed. Yeah, obviously, the take has changed.
But that's what I'm saying. But I love when Austin says stuff like, where he'll be like, that guy got hit in a football game. He's like, I hope he's paralyzed.
That was an off-air conversation.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. But I didn't say who. I'm just saying, like, he's that kind of sports fan where he's like, yeah, I hope that guy's dead. It's like, yeah.
Eagle safety should still be in jail.
That's the real sports fan talk. That's the way that it actually is versus the way that it is on Twitter, where it's like, yeah, everyone kumbaya. That's all the time. Or just extreme hatred that goes way too far. Anyways, let's wrap this up. I'm tired. All right. Subscribe to this podcast. Leave 5 stars. Share with your friends. Tell your friends. If you're listening to the podcast only portion of this thing, leave a review, because you're the people that we're doing this for. So, yeah.
5 stars.
I'd appreciate it. Or just share it. Share it on Twitter. Share it on Instagram. Reach out on the DMs at JD Bunkus on Twitter, Instagram. Follow there. Do all those things. Yeah, people have been hitting me up in the DMs. And yeah, you'll always ask me, like, how can I help the show? It's like, share the clips. Share the stuff. Like, do the comment on the clips. Don't DM me, like, hey, this was a good clip. I'm like, yeah, cool. Put it in the comments. That's how it works. Anyway, we got to run. Have a happy Easter weekend. Happy Passover. We will see you on Monday when the Raptors are done their season.